You're about to listen to the Nest of Vipers podcast. This episode is a little racy in spots. We've got some racy language and some racy situations. If you have a delicate constitution and choose to continue listening, good for you. All right, welcome to the Nest of Vipers podcast, cultural chit-chat for know-it-alls, ne'er-do-wells, and nattering nabobs everywhere. I'm your host, Danny Plotnick, and each week on the show, we have a team of esteemed blabbermouths spouting off about cultural topics of the utmost importance, and today we're going to talk about dating, because I'd like to think that people who listen to this show have possibly been on one or two dates. If you've been on one or two, there's a good chance that at least one of them was a bad date. So with that said, let me introduce the panel. As almost always, here we have Tony B.
Should I sing the theme from Mystery Date? Remember that board game?
I do.
Mystery Date, who will be your mystery date?
Will he be a dream? Or a dud.
And which would you be?
Straight up dud.
I like the notion that a board game could have a theme song.
I like the notion that there's an alternate universe in which everybody that we're going to tell our bad date stories about
our
is
shut-ins.
Also telling a story about having bad dates with all of us.
Oh, that would call, yeah. If we could only call in, like, irate exes calling in.
Actually, the mystery date theme song morphed into at our house. We have this game we play at our house called Mystery Fridge, where, you know, it's time.
Mystery Fridge.
Yeah, that's what it is. So Ray and I, like, Ray will just, like, I'll be, you know, sitting in the kitchen, and then Ray will start going, do-do-do-do, and then I know it's time to throw out the month-old leftover.
All right. And here we have Beth Lissick, writer, author of Everybody Into the Pool.
Hello.
And first time on the show, Sadie Shaw, a double threat musician, filmmaker, musician in the band The Husbands, and a filmmaker of an upcoming film called...
Bad Day.
Oh,
Bad
really?
Day. Yes. Oh, hi.
So we have to have Sadie on. All right, very good. Well, we're going to get things rolling with Beth.
All right, so I had, when you asked me about this topic, I was like, I haven't had a bad date, because I was never a big dater, you know? I would just meet somebody at a party, and then they were my boyfriend. Right? You know, I don't know, like, I just
called
never
hooking up.
I just never had, like, somebody ask you on a date.
Do people date anymore? I mean, is that even an archaic
term? Yeah, because there's a lot of people I know who are single now have incredible internet dating stories, and all those Match.com and Craigslist and all that stuff. But my story is, I was about 20 years old, 19 or 20, and I was living in Santa Cruz, and I was working at a bakery. And sometimes I would work the counter, and sometimes I would work in the back and do the breads and the muffins. So there was this one customer who would come in, and it was always, when you work at a bakery, one of the pet peeves, at least at our bakery, was when somebody would come in, and they didn't know if they wanted a cookie or a muffin or a scone or a loaf of rye bread. They just wanted whatever was hot. And it was so weird, because it was like just this
weird. Hey, baby, what's hot?
Well, it didn't even come off like a pickup line, but it was just kind of this gross ambivalence. Like, give me what's warm. What's warm? What's over there on the rack?
That's not really ambivalent.
But really, you don't know if you want a loaf of rye bread or a poppy seed muffin.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're going in for a cookie and you walk away with a loaf of rye bread, I mean, that's.
Kind of
ambivalent, sure. I'll give it to you.
All right. So,
are your morning buns warm?
So this was one of those guys who he would just always wanted whatever was hot. But then he would, it wasn't a bakery where you could, there was an outdoor porch where you could sit down, but there was no space inside the bakery to sit down and eat anything.
That's actually brilliant as far as.
Get him out.
Get him out.
So,
don't want to deal with the customers. Send him outside.
but he would stand there in just the customer service area eating whatever was hot. And kind of staring at me. And I was 19 or 20, and he was vaguely kind of attractive-ish, but it was just more creepy. And
who's that creepy yet attractive stalker in the window?
Well, there's
whatever's hot.
That replacement song, Customer.
Yeah.
I'm in love with a girl who works at a grocery store, but I'm nothing but a customer.
Somehow, one day, I went up to the... When it got busy, I would have to go up the counter and ring people up. So I was ringing him up, and he was like... hey, you know, my name's Scott, and, you know, I go to school at UCSC. And I was like, oh, so do I. And so do you, I think it was summertime, and he said...
That's such a bullshit kind of line. I go to school at UCSC. Like, of course.
But somehow that made him, like, safe or something, you know? Right. Because it was... So anyway, he asked me if I wanted to go. Now, this is the part that's kind of confusing to me, is that this person who I already thought was kind of creepy asked me to go on a date. And because I'd never really been asked out on a date in that kind of way, I was just sort of like, well, why not? Sure. Okay. So we arranged for him to come pick me up at my house. And I find out he's 28 or 20. He's a graduate
student. So old.
Yeah. Oh, so totally ancient, you know. And he's getting his PhD in biophysics. And... picked me up maybe in a Honda or something like that. And we go to...
Something classy.
Yeah, just like I had a Honda myself, you know? And so we go to a movie, which I... No. First we go out to dinner. And we go to this restaurant called Seychelles, which is in downtown Santa Cruz. And it's in an old house. And it's like the, you know, if you're not going to the one place that's on the water that's kind of romantic, it's sort of like a, you know, like a nice date place to go. So...
Seychelles.
It's Seychelles, like the islands. And so there's candles. And we have nothing to talk about. You know, I have a shaved head and thrifty store clothes, and I'm just kind of a spaz, and he's, you know, this kind of brainiac, but also there is something super creepy about him. Just as I'm sitting across the table from him, I'm like, weird, 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 weird.
Did he wear a suit?
And
What did he order?
He was probably wearing some khaki pants and a button down shirt,
right there.
Some topsiders, you know. And
nice khakis.
He was wearing his nice
dress khakis.
Dress khakis.
Date khakis.
Without the elastic in the back.
And what his hair looked like.
And he had kind of shaved hair too. Blonde hair. He had really weird looking eyes. Like big, gigantic, light blue eyes. And
gigantic bulging.
With like kind of like light eyebrows sort of. And light eyelashes. And so anyway, so we have this dinner and then we go, and I don't really want to go see a movie with him now. But we go and see some kind of foreign film. I was trying to remember what it was. I can't remember. But
Caligula.
Nickelodeon. and you know, something with subtitles. Like I just felt like he really wanted to have a romantic date.
This was a date.
This is why I knew this was it, because this is like, you know, the one date that I'd been on, and it was bad. So then we go to the movie. Then after the movie, I've got to get up to be at the bakery at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's probably 11:30 or something by now. And I'm like, well, okay, I gotta go, you know. And he's like, I'd really like to take you to see my yurt. And I was like, you're what? And he's
what's
like,
a yurt?
I live in a yurt. And a yurt is it's a alternative kind of housing that is sort of like a tent or a teepee. But it's like a structure that's sort
it's
of
kind of
like
hexagonal.
Yeah.
It's many-sided.
It's not a relative of the llama. The
weird thing about it is that later, 2 years later, I went to somebody else's yurt who raised llamas in the Santa Cruz Mountains.
Well, that okay, so but that's there's not a far stretch.
Anyway, I was like, what? So he's explained to me what a yurt was.
Because you didn't know.
Somehow the yurt pulls me in.
Wait, did you know what a yurt was?
No, I didn't know what a yurt was.
What's a yurt?
Yeah. No, I had him explain. We were in the car on the way for him to take me home. And then what he pulls me in with, I love this, that I was like somehow sucked in by the yurt. And I get, it's just that thing of like,
I've slept in a yurt once in Northern California.
Did it have a floor? Because this one actually had like a wood floor. Well,
yeah,
so
there
we
was some kind of
yurt.
Floor.
Okay, but...
The yurt was sexy, too, I just have to say. So I know why you're going there, but
we
sure.
So it takes forever to get to the yurt. We are going Santa Cruz Mountains back. It's just dark, winding roads. And I was like, you know, I got to get up really early. I can't believe this is... I'm going to have to go home later. And oh, no problem. I'll take you home. And I really think that this car ride was about 25 or 30 minutes. Like, it was long. We get all the way into the mountains, and it's just dark. We get out, and I'm in the middle of the woods. I'm like, fuck. Okay, whoops. And so...
Cue the Friday the 13th music.
Yeah. I know. So we get out, like, crackling across sticks, you know, and going through this path to get to the... And then we just end up... And he opens the door to the yurt, and there are scarves thrown across the lights. There are velvet pillows on the bed, not a futon, but a real bed he had, which at that point was like, wow. And pieces of lace tied to the bed. bedposts that were draped down in an X across the bedspread, like for just some sexy restraints. Oh. And
She'd never been on a date, but she could recognize a sexy restraint when she saw one.
And there were overflowing garbage cans of uneaten bakery products. It was basically muffins and buns.
Okay, but this is the capper. This is the capper. On the turntable, spinning around, which he must have put on 5.5 hours earlier before he came to pick me up, because it's on the repeat. It's on the repeat function. So the music is playing as we walk in.
What was it?
Roxy Music's Avalon.
Okay. Avalon.
Over and over and over. Okay.
Ooh.
Tony will just
Avalon.
And so I'm like, oh, wow.
And you love that song, right?
No, no, I was just like,
not anymore.
Whoa. Yeah, not anymore.
I used to love this.
So I'm like, huh? And there's nothing really in the yurt except a big bed. And so there's some other house that he refers to, that there's like the main house or whatever. If I have to use the bathroom, I can go in the main house. And, you know, which you can't see from the yurt. I have no idea where it is. And
was
so
it just a bigger
just
yurt?
Is
it just a bigger
I know,
yurt?
It could have just been. I never ended up seeing it.
You were in the pod yurt.
Oh my god! And so I am embarrassed to admit that we made out a little bit. Why? Oh. Why? Oh. I don't know. I feel
you
like I didn't
there,
know what
you
else
were in
to
the
do.
Yurt.
It's just more work not to.
It beat talking.
Maybe
it'd
that when we were
carrying
all talking
on, carrying on
well,
with
I, there
this
was
song.
Part of me that was kind of like, well, I don't know, maybe if we make out it'll be okay, but then it was I was not attracted to him. It was just weird and creepy, and I just felt like I was just all with my bad shaved head that was grown out, like kind of manchichi, like just yeah. You know, I was just like a
like,
I was
wait
dork.
Like
I was
what
just, yeah, you know, like those manchichis, those dolls.
You know,
manchichi, oh, so soft and cuddly. You know, it's like when you shave your head and then it grows out, but it just
I'm
looks
just gonna
fuzzy.
Say yes.
So anyway,
oh, you do.
So then that was going so well, and then he said, "Oh, I'll be right back." And so it was just weird because we were making out and he was trying to go further, and I was like, "Oh," and he's like, "I want to try something to you that." You know, I was like, "What? Oh, I don't know." And he's like, "People say I'm really talented at it." And I was like, "I don't know. I don't." And so I was just
the
like,
mind
no.
Wobbles.
And so I was like, "You know what? I really need to go home. I'm really sorry that we just drove a half hour to get here, but you have to drive me home." And we were probably at the yurt for, you know,
an hour and a half.
No, like 15-20 minutes. And he goes, "Be right back." And this is after I tell him I have to leave. So he leaves and he's gone for kind of a long time. And I start getting really worried because I'm sitting there by myself. And so I'm just sitting there and the music's still going on and on. And then I start thinking everything like, oh my God, he's getting some like weird dude housemate of his and they're going to come in and rape me. You know, I mean, I don't, you know, seriously.
I've never had that done to me before. Maybe that's it.
He does that really well.
No, this was after he said he wanted to do that thing to me. And then I was like, no. So I'm sitting there looking around, waiting, imagining all sorts of horrible things. And I just decide, this is not a good idea. This is some advice if you're meeting somebody for the first time, or maybe it is because it is a good warning. Yeah, I know, the yurt should have been the tip off. I pull open the bedside drawer because I'm just sitting there. Yeah. This has happened before and I've found syringes and been like, I gotta go. I pull open the bedside drawer, a handgun. Just a handgun in the drawer right next to the bed and the restraints and he's gone. And I'm like, oh my, I have to get out of here. So
most gun accidents happen in your yurt.
Oh my God. So this was really bad. So I basically came back and I was like, I didn't tell him I saw the gun. I know, I've seen your handgun. I need to go. So I didn't tell him I saw the gun. I was just like, you need to. And so then we just the most awkward of silences the entire ride through the forest all the way back. Dropped me back off at my house and was like, so, you know, you want to hang out again sometime? And I was like, So for a while he came back in the bakery after that and I just would not look at him. And of course I told everybody in the bakery the story. and so then eventually he just kind of stopped coming in the bakery.
The danger of dating someone at your favorite baked goods store when it goes wrong. Right. Where are you going to get your hot muffins. Mm-hmm. So wait, did you ever find out what he was going to do to
no.
you?
No. Oh, I think he just meant a little, you know.
no, what?
But I still don't know why he was gone for so long. No. Wait, that was like a separate event. It was like he said he was going to do the special thing to me, and then I was like, no. And then he kept trying to go further, and I was like, no. And then he's like, all right, I'll be right back.
Nobody who's ever experienced a special thing.
Did he get a nickname at the bakery?
Oh, God. I don't think so.
Like Gunder, man.
I mean, so anyway.
That's a horrible day.
Yeah. Right. I just think of that about the age, you know, my age at the time of my experience is that I just kind of kept going along with it. It's so weird.
When you're young, you're searching. Tony B.
All right.
What can you offer us in a special way?
Nobody who has ever experienced. No. Actually, this dating story. It was more like a. This is an unrequited. It's not so much my date as hearing about. Okay, there was this girl who I had a very long standing crush on.
Give us some years.
I'd say this is kind of late 80s. We were living together in London in the same building and in a bedsit in Earl's Court.
A bedsit?
Yeah, that's, you know.
Earl's Court? London?
Yurts? Bedsits?
And it was,
can't
you know, it was a very
story that takes place in a house or an apartment? Or I'd even accept a flat.
You know, and it was a very long-standing, unrequited crush. And meanwhile, like, you know, we'd still be going out.
Was she English?
No, she was an American, but she was dating, all, you know, she was dating
she
various
was dating
guys.
English
and,
people.
Yeah, or, you know, Irish and English guys. And she had this real, you know, there was this guy that she was really attracted to, this guy whose name was Rusty. And he was an Irishman who was like long, like the long greasy hair with the leather motorcycle pants. He rode a motorcycle. It was like this total, you know, inscrutable. You couldn't even understand a word that he said, you know, and he was like, oh, yeah, you know, just kind of very guttural and, you know, like super just kind of greasy motorcycle guy that she was completely in love with. And so here I am, like, you know, watching this girl who I'm crushed out on, who's, you know, infatuated with this guy who's just like this complete greaseball motorcycle.
Doesn't she understand how brilliant I am?
You know, it's really one of those kind of scenes. And then finally, you know, she's like,
he's so uncouth.
I had to hear about her date. And basically, like, what happened was, you know, she finally hooked up with him at the club. And she's like, oh, yeah, he took me out on the motorcycle. And we went all over London. And we went drinking. And we were riding around, like,
and
drunk
all
on the motorcycle.
You're thinking, I'm doomed. He took her out on a motorcycle.
You know, and, you know, I
drunk
guess.
Drunk driving, even.
Drunk driving on a motorcycle all over London. And I guess he finally got her back to the bedsit. And, you know, things start getting all hot and heavy, and, you know, they're going for it, and the clothes are coming off, and pretty soon, you know, it's and, you know, she's just telling me all this, and, you know, finally, so I'm having to listen to an actual graphic description of him performing oral sex on her. She's like, oh my God, it was so great, and, you know, oh my God, he's going down. I was like, oh my God, this is just like the most awesome, you know. Oh my God, it's incredible, man. It's just like going, and, you know, I'm sitting there, oh yeah, and I'm fully into it and concentrating. Yeah, oh yeah, right, yeah. And,
oh, you're making me blush.
And then he stuck, you know, and I was like, oh yeah, or just like that. And
you have a future in phone sex, Andy.
He starts, you know, and apparently, you know, he, you know, fully into it, and he starts like slowing down a little bit, and she's like, oh yeah, just like that. And then he starts slowing down a little bit more, and she's like, well, no, like a little, no, like speed up a little bit, you know. And it's just, he's like kind of, it's just getting slower and slower and slower, and then it just comes to a full stop, and he's snoring. He has just completely fallen asleep.
And at that point, you're like, yeah.
During the middle, I was like, yeah.
I'd never fall asleep on you.
So, and it was just the most horrific date for her.
And the best time to have, you know,
I had to hear about it in full graphic detail. And now you, the listening audience,
oh my God,
know about.
Do you think there was a second date?
There was not a second date.
When she was coming to tell you the story, did she tell you, you're never going to believe what happened, this is did she pose it in a way that it was like terrible, or were you going along thinking, oh my God, she's just had this amazing date? And then,
yeah, she was super psyched, you know, or at least, you know, initially. But then when she was telling me the story, yeah, she's like, you're never going to believe what happened. I'm like, all right, let's hear it.
I can't see
so
being
she didn't
really
toy with your emotions. She let you know.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
I can't see being really excited to share that story.
Oh, I could. I mean, that's
it's all on him. She didn't do anything wrong. I mean, come on. So that means it's my turn.
Yeah, there we go.
It was 1986, and I was 14 years old. And
all right.
I have so much to tell, and you know, this really like sheds a light on what a little freaky weird kid I was. And there was an art house theater, like a Landmark theater, where they played Rocky Horror and Pink Flamingos and all that. And the projectionist and door guy, he was named Shane.
Where were you? What?
San Diego.
All right.
And I used to go there all the time, and I had half of my head was shaved, and I would flip it over. But then when my parents were
so they didn't
not
notice,
around, and I would go like that.
It was like a punk rock comb over to fool your parents,
exactly.
And it worked.
Yeah. Well, except for my mom caught me in the bath once, and then it was over. I was busted. Yeah, it was like those, you know, those dolls, that Little Red Riding Hood and the wolf. You know, it was the same concept with the skirt. Well, anyway, so I would go there with
exactly.
Anthony, you had sisters. Do you know what she's talking about?
No, I do not.
Well, I'm happy you do.
Yeah.
Or I'd be alone here. So I had my shaved head exposed, and I went to the theater all the time, and I would just stare at this guy named Shane, who had cystic acne.
The projectionist or the door?
He did both.
Oh, he did both. Okay.
He also picked all the good movies. I mean, he was really cool, and he was like 19 or 20, and he had floppy black hair in his eyes, and he was really awkward, and he wore suits, and I was just so crushed out on him. And I knew that he dealt acid, and I would
a lot going for him.
You know? It was meant to be. Yeah. I just had to make it happen. And so I would go there constantly and just stare at him, and I really wish I could remember how I got the date, but I got it. I finally got a date. And this is the only real date that I've ever been on, because like you said, I just hook up with guys at bars. Like, I don't ever.
Hey, got a new boyfriend.
So, yeah, I went on this date, and we met at the theater. We went up in the projection booth where he put out a bunch of lines of crystal meth. That was how to start the date off.
Wow.
And then in this theater, there's this thing that I'd never experienced again, which is called, like, I think a crying booth or some kind of.
When the movie's
you take
so
kids?
Bad.
Yeah.
They had one at the church that I went to, the Queen of Apostles. They had the crying room.
It's so cool.
The cry room.
And did it have speakers so you could hear?
Yeah.
Oh, so it was like this little kind of 10-seater.
Well,
partition.
It was like five-seater, and it was all glass. You're in a glass room with speakers. And, I mean, you know, it's just begging to be like the make-out closet. Because you can see the movie, but no one can see you.
And, right.
But we didn't make out. We went in there, and there was a lot of, like, tension.
Crying babies.
And, yeah. Well, no, we were alone. No crying babies. But I didn't know what to do. I could tell we were in there for a reason, but I didn't know what to do. And obviously, he didn't either. So we went to a movie, and we went to go see Manhunter. And
were you that date, Anthony? You knew the movie.
No, we were talking about the movie
That's
earlier.
A big reveal at the end.
Oh,
and
wait,
that
sorry,
man
I
was
blew it.
Anthony.
No, we went to see it, and I, at that time, hadn't done many drugs, so I was just out of my head. I was 14, he was 20, and we went to see this movie, and it wasn't that late. It was probably 10 or 11 at night, but, you know, in order for me to be out that late and probably later, I had to
call mom.
Tell mom I was at my best friend's house, and I was going to sleep at my best friend's house. The movie had started, and I went out to call my best friend discreetly, and, oh, by the way, I had told him I was 17, so he wasn't that bad off as a pedophile. And so I went out there and told my best friend, and she was like, you...
Now, did you look 17?
I think so. I think so. I didn't have much of, like, the pigtail baby face thing going on. I was a woman.
I was a woman.
I called my best friend, and she said, you are so busted. Your mom just called, and my mom answered. And not only does she know that you're not there tonight, she knows that you haven't been here for all these other nights. Like,
oh, no.
It is, you are so in
a
trouble.
A trail of tears.
And you're totally high right now, right?
Yeah.
So there's no going home.
Well, I'm, no, well, there was going home.
Yeah.
So I call my mother, and, cause I just knew, I don't know why I shouldn't, in retrospect, I should have just dealt with it the next day. She already knew that I was in big trouble, but I felt bad for her. I thought probably she was worried about me, cause she's a sweet lady. So I called her and I said, hi. And she said, where are you? I'm picking you up right now. And so I told her we were at this huge theater that was in the mall. And she came to pick me up, but that wasn't enough. She insisted that I pull the person that I was in the movie with out so she could give him a piece of her mind.
Wow.
And I said, no, no. And she just insisted, and I was crying. And so I went in there, and I told Shane with tears down my face that I wasn't 17, I was 14, and my mom was in the lobby.
See, this is where he is actually telling this story of his bad date to somebody else.
I can't believe this girl. She said she was 17, and then she brought her mom on the date.
That's just the best sentence to whisper into someone's ear in the movie.
Yeah, Rob's going on, I'm 14.
And my mom's in the lobby.
You feel a hot person. You're like, ooh, this is going to get good. I have something to tell you. I'm 14.
And my mom's in the lobby. The rest is kind of how you'd imagine. She yelled at him, and he said he didn't know. And then he went back to see the rest of the movie, and she took me home, and he never talked to me again.
Oh.
I just kept going to the theater because it was my neighborhood theater, and it was where the good men. And he wasn't mad. I think he was just not interested in...
Right, but that must have been so torturous as a teenager because you were so into him, and then he didn't want to have anything to do with you anymore.
But you had to go back and moon over him still.
Oh.
But, you know, it's really a funny, funny little capper is that I was working at Aquarius, and he came in. And I recognized him right away.
Wow. Record store in San Francisco.
Yeah. And he was just grumpy and nerdy, and he didn't look so good. He hadn't aged well. But it's probably all the crystal and acid. But I was so tempted to be like, remember me? I was the 14-year-old that we saw Manhunter. But I didn't. I really kind of wish I had. I don't know what he would have done with that information. I'm sure he remembered me, but... I didn't say anything.
Offered to take you back to his yurt.
Yeah. Or his bed sleep or whatever.
The bed sit.
So we've got the cry room, the bed sit, and the yurt.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It's a theme of odd places to make out.
Mine is also a high school dating story. Back in 1981 or 82, I'm a junior in high school in suburban Detroit, and there's a new girl who shows up junior year, and she's in a bunch of my classes, and I think she's kind of hot, and she's really nice to me. And again, I think part of the whole high school mental set is you're always shocked when anybody's nice to you, let alone someone of the opposite sex. You know, you just have no way of like comprehending what to do with that. Like, she likes me, maybe I should ask her out, but maybe she doesn't really like me that way, and by asking her out, I'll creep her out, and then she'll stop even liking me. You know, that probably takes me several months to get up the gumption to ask her out, and she says yes. It's like, you know, fantastic. So we decide, again, similar to Beth, you know, going for the romantic dinner in a movie. No, you didn't go to a movie.
No, we did.
The foreign film.
Oh, the foreign film. Yeah, so, you know.
Think classy.
Yeah, I'm going to take her to classy movie as well. So, but again, in terms of like coming up with sort of a, you know, a classy restaurant, you know, when you're a junior in high school, where usually dinner, if you go out with like your friends, is like Denny's or Big Boy's. I decide to take her to Thank God It's Fridays, TGIF, you know. And again, it just seems so classy, all these 20-somethings getting, you know, fucked up on, you know.
Long Island iced teas.
Long Island iced teas.
Potato skins.
Yeah.
Bacon bits.
Over in the bar, and then you're over in the other side.
It just seems so damn classy. And so we go to TGIF, and the date, I think, is going pretty smooth. We had the potato skins, the nachos, all of those things, all the great foods. From TGIFs. And at some point, I was supposed to know at the end of the dinner, the check comes, and I get the bill, the check, whatever it is, and I'm shocked at how much this classy date is costing me. And for the short term, I'm okay. I can actually pay the bill. But what I quickly realize is that I'm not going to have enough money left to take her to the movies. And not only am I not going to have enough money to take her left in the movies, I don't even have enough money left for my ticket. And there's nothing sort of in this high school world that I think is potentially more embarrassing than not being able to treat your date. I mean, certainly back then.
Did she know a movie was on the plate?
Yeah, she knew the movie was on the plate. It was all planned. And, you know, back then, the rules of the game, if you ask a girl out, you treat it. And so
I wish it was still that way.
So I just mentally, I just start freaking out. What am I going to do? How am I going to get out of this? And this is, a pre-ATM world. So there's no, and it's a pre- like high school kids having a credit card world. So it's like when you're out for the weekend, the money you have Friday at 4 o'clock is the money you have for the rest of the weekend. So there's no hope of getting any money. at this point. And so I just start going into overdrive. My little 16-year-old mind's like trying to come up with ways to get out of it. And I only come up with two ideas. And I recognize immediately that both of them are terrible. One is, well, maybe I can pretend to get sick or something. You know, oh, I shouldn't have eaten that last dollop of sour cream on the potato skins. You know, and somehow, you know, manufacture throwing up. But I quickly realize that the stigma of throwing up on or near your date is perhaps even worse than not being able to get her movie ticket. And then the other idea I have is this very kind of James Bond thing, like, well, I'll pretend to go to the bathroom and run out to the car and let the air out of the tires and we'll be late for the movie. And then I realize, like, I don't actually know how to do anything that complicated. So the best that I can come up with is, well, we'll just drive to the movies and kind of see what happens.
I love that part so much because that's just how it is when you're that age. Like, you're, the consequences, like, you don't really put things together that way. It's like, well, let's just drive to the movies, even though I don't have enough money to pay for it. Like,
well, what else are you going to do? Because otherwise, you just have to admit at that point that you don't.
Right. So it's just forestalling. Yeah.
Maybe I can get in a car accident on the way. That'll be a good idea. You know, I'm thinking that. And then, so I think, you know, to this point, I'm going to say the date's been going good, but at this point, I'm sure I become the world's worst date because she's, you know, nattering away, talking to me all the way over to the movies. And I'm just sitting there like stone-faced driving, thinking, I'm doomed. You know, I'm sure not responding at all. And we get to the theater and there's a ray of hope because the line for the movie is around the block. And it seems like everybody that Friday night is dying to see Tootsie.
Tootsie, all right.
Blockbuster, that one.
And I'm thinking, maybe it's going to sell out. I could be saved. And so we start walking down the line to the end of the line, and we bump into some friends we knew. And so we start talking to them. I'm thinking, well, this is great. If I can stand here for 10 minutes talking to them, another 20 people will get in line. We'll be that much closer to being sold out. And then at some point, our friend's like, oh, do you want to cut in line with us? And I'm like, no, that, you know, and I do like turn to the people behind us. That wouldn't be fair to these people. All of a sudden, you know, trying to be very classy. And so we go to the back of the line and as it turns out, the show sells out.
Yes.
And I don't have to get there. And I'm so excited at this point because I now realize because the plan that we had has gone awry, I can now get out of anything. And this is a movie that is like a duplex. And, you know, whatever the other movie was playing, I was against it. You know, it's like, do you want to see the Dare Hunter? It's like, oh, no, you know, there's a Polish wedding scene that goes on forever. I hear it's terrible. Well, what about Raging Bull? You know, it's like, it's black and white. Who wants to see that crap? I mean, I don't remember what it was, but whatever it was, like, nah, it's terrible. And then she's like, well, you know, it's playing at this theater. Tootsie's playing at this theater across town. Maybe we could go there. And I'd be like, no, forget it. By the time we got there, I'm sure it'd be sold out. You know, it's like, do you want to go bowling? No, my bursitis is killing me. I mean, whatever she was throwing out there, I was like, no, you know. And again, like, I'm sure I seem like a bad date, but at this point, my entire goal is just, it's got to end. And it's this funny thing because I've been looking forward to this thing for like 2 months and now it's like 7:30 and I just want it over. And I don't care how crappy I look. If I never see her again, it's just avoiding the humiliation. And so I suggest, the only thing that would not involve money, why don't we go back to your place? You know, which is so pathetic at that point. Cause,
I also just love your place. Like when you're in high school, you live with your parents. Your
place. Go back to your pad. And do you have cable TV? I don't know. And I feel like at best that maybe that was perceived as some kind of makeout move. You know, we'll go back to your place at 7:30, but which it wasn't at all. And I also had this vision of like walking in on her parents making out. Right? I mean, you know, our daughter's out. We can have sex. You know, she won't be back till at least 10. You know, and then kind of returning sheepishly at 7:30. And so I was able to just totally skate away without being humiliated. But I think it's just one of those things that it was this funny thing where it wasn't a particularly bad date because she never really found out. And no one did. But I think, you know, in high school, you're just always so worried that you're going to be discovered as some kind of charlatan or just some just classless, uncouth boob. And I would skated so close to that I was just like forever scarred by that, you know, moment where it all narrowly came tumbling down.
But you persevered and won.
But I persevered and won. And then the funny cap to that story is several years later in college, when, and I mean, I should also say that back when I was a junior in high school, I was very, I'm not going to say my mom dressed me, but you know, we might as well say that. And when I got to college in my sophomore year, and I got a leather jacket and
dressed myself,
got something resembling a grown up mohawk. You know, all of a sudden, all these girls from high school who had sort of spurned me were all of a sudden really interested in me, including this girl. And so we actually ended up going out for several weeks. And the thing is, she wanted to go out with me, and I actually had no interest at that point, but there was that part of me that was like, well, I did sort of lust after you for several, you know, months or perhaps years in high school, and now here's this opportunity. I'm not interested at all, but, you know, what are you gonna do? Go out with a person for about 2 weeks and...
Did you take her to a movie at least?
Manhunter? No, I don't know. I do not recollect.
They're all really bad dates, guys.
Yeah, dates.
We succeeded.
I think it's a topic that will never run dry.
Yeah.
Sadly. I could do this every weekend for the next 2 months.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Fantastic. You've been listening to the Nest of Vipers podcast. All right, and if those bad date stories weren't enough, we have a bonus story from Bucky Sinister, recorded with Anthony Bedard and Jack Boulware in the background as well. Here we go.
The first couple of days I was in the Bay Area. I was staying with a friend of a friend in San Mateo. I was taking the Samtrans up during the day to look for apartments in San Francisco. But at night I was just kind of bumming around San Mateo. And I was coming out of a 7-Eleven, and I hear somebody start yelling at me, like, hey! Hey, you, hey, you with a haircut. And I was just like, you know, okay, there's some crazy cholos or some jocks or something. And
what kind of haircut did you have?
Yeah, kind of this mohawk disaster. Yeah, so I turn around ready to go. I mean, it's go time. We're about to fight, you know, and turn around, and there's this really awesome looking punk girl sticking her head out of a car, and there's... You know, her two little friends driving it in the front. So we end up hanging out, and she's really cool. And her friends drop us off over the Safeway, and then they go. But, you know, in the Safeway, she, like, steals this bottle of vodka for me. And just kind of slides it right into her coat, just like, you know. Just
true
like,
love.
I know. It was really a way to impress me when I was 20. And just like, ah, she'd steal a big bottle of booze for me. And we walk out, and... go to the train tracks to drink it, and everything's cool, and we split it.
Straight, you know, now?
Yeah, we're just passing this back and forth.
Warm vodka.
Yeah, totally, you know. Like, and
odd,
it was like,
odd to be even,
the thing is, like, you know? Yeah. It probably didn't steal anything.
Odd to be 20 again.
Like, yeah. Like, it was a thing we're not even odd smart sad. Enough to steal something better, you know. It's like, I think it was just like, you know. Just like Smirnoff vodka or something like that. I could have stolen anything, but you know, still,
Clark vodka.
You know, yeah. It's like, so you know, it wasn't a $6 Kamchatka vodka, but it was you know, still pretty swellish. But we split this thing, and so we each had like, you know, half a fifth. It was like about a pint. We're pretty trash, you know. Like, and she says, "Yeah, why don't you come over to my house? I want to show you something." I was like, hell yeah, I'm ready to see it.
It's the line you've been waiting for your whole life. Totally. Here you are, you're in the big city.
That's right. And I hope you have a toilet, by the way.
Yeah, totally. And so we get to her house, and she's like, why don't you come back in my room? I'm like, hell yeah, let's go. And we get to her room, and I'm a little bit behind her. She reaches under the bed to get something.
And it just keeps getting better.
Yeah, and when she pulls it out, she unrolls it on her bed, and it's a full size Nazi flag. It's like as big as her twin bed.
Oh, and you just made love on top of it.
Well, you know, funny you should ask. But no,
the day was going so good to that point.
Did you roll her up in it and throw her back on the tracks?
I was just like, it kind of freaked me out. I was like, okay, this isn't going to be cool. The last thing, like, no, I had
this isn't going
to
last.
Cue the theme to Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah, I'd already had a succession of like kind of like stalkerish girlfriends who had kind of scared me, who had just been like little art school chicks and stuff like that.
So you've moved up to the Nazi.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like this is, you know, if this goes like you did with like, you know, what's her name, like last year, like this is
the religious chicks, the art school chicks, but now the fascist chicks.
She unrolled the flag and you were like, Jawohl.
Yeah.
Oh, mein Herr.
So
I convoke again.
I was like, you know, is that a joke? Are you really into this? Did you like what the hell?
That's not a great line because you got a flag. You got the big flag that you pull out on the first date. I'm thinking it's not a joke.
Yeah, I know. And she was,
but
like,
she was thinking this was going to impress you, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like you were
like a Nazi.
Like you were that close to being a Nazi anyway, or something.
With the right
vodka, anyone can be a Nazi.
Yeah, this is like 1989, and like the punks and the skins were kind of splitting at that point, and you know, it's like where they were evolving into two entirely separate scenes.
Kind of around the Geraldo Rivera.
Yeah,
Nazi
it was about about a year after that or something, and so I don't know. Like she had kind of like what we still considered a punk haircut, but it was like when I'm looking back at it, it's kind of more of like a. Like
Aryan
like
features?
No, like kind of like a Chelsea, you know, like the skinhead Chelsea cut, you know, whatever, the long fake sideburn.
I think they're showing that in Vogue this
year. Like the little, like a little kind of tucked in the front, and it was like, you know, this is like a, you know, San Mateo skinhead kind of look, I guess. And as it turns out, you know, but I don't know.
Can we Google San Mateo skinhead and see what we get?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
So what happened, man?
Well, you know, like I said, look, you know, you're not really in this. She's like, yeah, I am. I was like, well, this isn't gonna work out. I gotta leave. And then she looked really upset. Like, you know, what I do? And then I was just like, hey, look. And actually, kind of stayed around there and talked with her for a while about it. I'm like, why are you into this? Like, you know, who gave you this flag? Where'd you get it? Like, come on. Like, what? You know, are you? Is it like just some group of knuckleheads that you know or whatever? And
nothing pisses Nazis off more than calling him a bunch of knuckleheads.
Yeah.
Well, it blows the whole like, you know, fascist world domination.
Talking about it, and at the, it's like, what do you really, you know, I get into kind of a more deeper thing, you know, like what do you really want from your life? And she said she really wanted to be a mortician. I was like, well, there's a school of mortuary science in San Francisco. It's really good. It's one of the best mortuary science schools in the country.
They have a Nazi division.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. She's like, well, you know, how do you know about this? Like, you know, I've been chasing goth girls for years. Are you kidding me? Of course I know about this place, you know? And so...
a little job counseling.
Yeah, yeah. Just pointing away, and all of a sudden, we start to hear like a key in the front door, and her eyes get really big. She's like, oh shit, you gotta get out of here. And I'm like, oh, what? I'm thinking it's like, you know, like the Nazis coming. I think it's the Nazi skinheads.
The Fuhrer is home.
They're all here.
The boys from Brazil, the one renegade one living in San Mateo.
It's like, you know, it races through my mind. It's like, oh, I've been, you know, like it's, you know, like it's maybe it's her boyfriend, and like, you know, she brought me home and he was gone and now he's home and it's going to get ugly. And so I like started getting the full, like,
and it was her mom, and it turned out she was 14.
It was her mom. And her mom was huge.
I've seen
and
this
her mom like took up the whole doorway. It was just like this crazy,
was
like
it Eddie Murphy.
And it looks like, you know, this is a huge like mom. And she was like, mom. She saw me and just like the fire got in her eyes and she was like, you know, you have to get out of here. Like, you know, I'm going to call the cops on you. And she was standing between me and the door, and I couldn't leave. I didn't want to get closer. I was like, I want to go. I don't know where to get out.
Was a Nazi flag still on the bed?
I don't know. I'm not sure what she did with that.
Did the mom know about the Nazi thing?
She probably thought I was the one who, like, you know, got her into it. Like, you know, just
that'd be a bad scene if you're kind of with that chick and there's a Nazi flag. You're kind of naked. You're both kind of naked, and the mom walks in, and it's just a bad scene.
Yeah, yeah. So
not that that was a scene, but when we make the movie, that should be the scene.
But did you get naked on top of the flag?
No. No,
I was seeing the poster for the movie right there.
Did you give job counseling on top of the flag?
No, we did not. And somehow her mom's like going for the phone, because this is pre-cell phone days, kids. And her mom's like going for the phone to call the cops. And I take my thing to run past her and get out the door. And she's got her phone in hand. And she's like, I'm calling the cops right now. They're going to come get you. And behind it, like, this girl is like, give me the call me sign. Like right behind her mom and everything. And strangely enough... A couple years later, I'm down at that newsstand at Powell Street, like that one newsstand that was right there, a couple stops up from the cable car. Mark, and
we're all just going to say yes.
Yeah, yeah. And this lady comes up to me in full like business attire, and she calls me by name, and I didn't recognize. She's like, "You don't recognize me, do you?" And I'm like, "No."
She says, "They want to show you something." She pulls her skirt down, and she has some Nazi underwear on. Right?
No, that would be pretty hot. I think I would have probably ended there. That was a pretty good ending. Like, look at these. But you know, it was her, and she was with some other people, and she's like, "You remember me?" I'm like, and she said her name and said, I'm now at the School of Mortuary Science. I was like, holy crap. And, you know, she actually went. And
it's a wonderful life.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I said, are you still into all that stuff you used to be into? She's like, nah, I grew out of that. So I,
Wow. I'm into sex with dead people.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, totally.
So we went back to her place of work on the slab.
Yeah.
Been listening to the Nest of Vipers podcast. For more information on the show and to leave feedback, check out our website, www.nestofviperspodcast.typepad.com. Also, you can check out movie clips of the music, movies, and other cultural references we make at our YouTube channel, www.youtube.com/nestofviperspodcast.